WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back, Tuscaloosa, to the student section. I'm your host, Aiden McGuirk, joined, as always, by Rennell Foreman. Got a lot of talked about this weekend. Tons of great football, as per usual. But, like always, we have a fantastic and interesting Monday Night Football matchup coming up here in the next 15 minutes. The New England Patriots will take on the Cleveland Browns. Could potentially see the return of Mac Jones. This is in New England, in Foxborough. New England has got a 82% chance to win here. They are favored to win -8.5. So a decent sized spread here for the Pats. Not the Cleveland Browns, the Chicago Bears. So Matt Eberflus and Justin Fields will travel to New England to take on what potentially could be Mac Jones' return to the field after he suffered that high ankle sprain in week 3. All right, Rennell, who do you got to win this matchup?
I think the safe pick is going to be the Patriots here. I'm not too sold on the Browns. They haven't shown me too much. I thought they were going to be a little better. Their defense has been a little iffy, but I think this should be the Patriots game to win. If they just don't, they minimize turnovers. They don't turn the ball over, which Mac Jones doesn't do if he does return. And even if he doesn't, Zappi's he's been looking good too. So this should be the Patriots game to win. Anything can happen.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you bring up here. Bailey Zappi has started the last two games for the New England Patriots after their second-string quarterback, Brian Hoyer, also suffered an injury. Bailey Zappi has won both of those games, and there's some rumblings in the media, as there always is, that perhaps maybe he should be the guy starting from this point forward. Mac Jones, only one of two. His record through the first three games. But I think I have to address this. Mac Jones is a starting quarterback in New England and will be when he returns. I don't think Bailey Zappi is going to be taking his job. He's only started two games. The defense really helped out in those two games. And we're looking here. They were versus the Lions, who had one of the worst defenses, if not, I think they are statistically the worst in the NFL. And the Browns, again, not a phenomenal defense, also suffered a lot of injuries. So I'm not been overly impressed with Bailey Zappi. But like you mentioned, if Mac Jones is not 100% ready to go, he has won those past two games. Maybe because the matchup here is pretty favorable for New England, they just let him play this third game, give Mac Jones another week to get healthy, perhaps?
I think that's fine. It's kind of a similar thing to the Cooper Rush situation up in Dallas. So, you know, they both have done fine. They've played fine ball. And, you know, as a backup, your whole job is just to manage the game. So, and you're totally right. And, you know, Mac Jones is not losing his starting job. Not a chance. Unless, you know, something catastrophic happens. And I also want to say that I did mess up. It's actually the Bears and not the Browns. So that's my apologies. But the same prediction still stands. I don't think the Bears have a good enough offense. And they just don't have good weapons. And Justin Fields seems to be getting harassed by his offensive line.
Definitely against the Chicago Bears, I like New England's Patriots' chances a little bit more. So I'm going to take New England to win, and I'm going to take them to cover against the Chicago Bears tonight. I just have not been overly impressed with anything offensively Chicago has been able to do this season. Defense has been okay, not stellar. So I'm taking New England to win and cover. Thursday night football. Hey, they finally scored some points. There were some points scored in Thursday night football. It had been pretty difficult to watch for the past 2-3 weeks in a row.
Feels like the whole season.
Yeah, I'm pretty much from the start of Thursday Night Football, it's been tough. But we had some fireworks in this one. Arizona beat Andy Dalton and the Saints, 42-34. Jameis Winston did not play, having an injury. So Andy Dalton got the start. And I got to say, I thought the Saints did pretty well offensively under Andy Dalton. Obviously, we saw the return of DeAndre Hopkins for Arizona. I'm sure he was much missed. One of the best receivers in the NFL, I think most people would consider. Kyler Murray played a really good game, 20 of 29 for 204 yards, one touchdown. And Andy Dalton, 30 of 47 for 361 yards and four touchdowns. Now, he did have three picks, so not a clean game by Andy Dalton. But certainly a more exciting game than what we've seen from Thursday Night Football over the past few weeks. So that was a nice change. I'll tell you what was exciting, too. The Panthers-Bucks game. The Panthers took down Tom Brady and the Bucks 21-3. It kind of got off to a bad start, right? You had that deep shot to Mike Evans that it kind of looked like he caught and then threw into the stands on his way into the end zone. The Bucks are struggling, and there's a lot of questions about Tom Brady and his focus, struggling with maybe some things at home, taking a lot of time off during training camp, retiring and then unretiring this offseason. So how much can we blame Tom Brady for the struggles of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I don't know if I'm just such a forgiving person because of his past success, but it's not all on Tom Brady. It's really not all on Tom Brady. The thing is, I do think there has been a lack of focus on his end. I mean, you got Antonio Brown on Twitter just going crazy on, you know, on, he's basically the biggest Tom Brady hater right now. Everything he says about Tom Brady on Sunday seemed to go viral. He's facing a divorce with his wife. Yeah, we don't, you know what's going to end up be the end result of that, but you know, this stuff is all, you know, mounting and mounting on him. I feel like Tom Brady hasn't really gotten the best circumstances, you know, these last few weeks. But that's just a bad loss. That's a terrible loss against a team that they almost look like they were revitalized by that win. The team that traded away, just fired their coach. They traded away their best player. They're looking to trade away DJ Moore, too. They're just looking for assets. And that's a tough loss, but it's tough because you see Tom Brady going 32-49 and he doesn't score any touchdowns and he was only sacked one time. So there's something that's not clicking between him and his receivers, and it's very interesting since those were the same guys he's had for the last couple of years. So I'm not sure what's going on with the Bucs. I hope they rebound, though.
Yeah, just to address some of the things that you've mentioned, trading away players. Carolina Panthers obviously fired their head coach, Matt Rhule, and are going into a full rebuild. Traded away Christian McCaffrey to the San Francisco 49ers for three picks. I believe it's a third, fourth, and fifth pick. Or is it a second, third, and fourth pick? It's one of those combinations of three picks. But I know there are three picks in subsequent order. So Christian McCaffrey, now a San Francisco 49er. And, of course, Robbie Anderson, their wide receiver, Carolina traded to the Arizona Cardinals after they're trying to find someone to step in for Hollywood Brown. Teams have been calling and have been reaching out for potential trade interest for DJ Moore. It'll be interesting to see if Carolina does decide to trade him away, because Carolina has mentioned that he is a foundational piece for them and would like him to be a part of this rebuild. So I don't know. We could maybe see him traded. Carolina may hold on to him. But at this point in time, Carolina is holding on to him. But yeah, I think one of the things that you can look at to kind of help make sense of why Tampa is struggling is their offensive line. They've had several injuries. I think it was their right guard who retired this season, before the season. They lose their center, Ryan Jensen. And, you know, that's kind of showed up here with the rushing numbers. Like you mentioned, Tom Brady was only sacked one time, so they're doing a decent job in pass protection, but the team only had 46 yards on the ground this game, which is abysmal.
It's abysmal.
You can't run for 2.9 yards at average and only 46 yards in total in a game and expect to win.
And I'm sorry, but we do have to keep in mind, Tom Brady threw the ball 49 times. He didn't even get over. He didn't eclipse 300. He was close to 300 yards, but he didn't eclipse 300, and he didn't have any scoring touchdown or passing touchdown. So I feel like it's more just Tom Brady getting the ball out quickly than him just being able to distribute and having time back there in the pocket.
Yeah. Carolina definitely had what looked to be a very balanced offensive approach. They had 173 yards rushing and 177 yards passing, so very even numbers there in terms of yards rushing and passing. Dante Foreman had 15 carries for 118 yards. It looks like they're going to look to him now without Christian McCaffrey on this team as their lead running back. DJ Moore, like you mentioned, 7 catches for 69 yards and a touchdown. Mike Evans had 9 catches for 96 yards, so again, they moved the ball well. You go back and you watch the game, Tampa really did move the ball well down the field, right? But ultimately, they could not convert. And another thing, they went for it on fourth down, surprisingly high rate, like a shockingly high rate. So that is an interesting thing as well, going for it on fourth down as much as they have. Todd Bowles has been very lenient with Tom Brady. Tom Brady has 7 Super Bowls. He has earned some flexibility. But at the same time, you retire this offseason, so you don't work over the summer with your receivers. They bring in Julio Jones. They bring in Russell Gage. So both of those guys are new to this program. They don't have Gronkowski. Antonio Brown leaves the program because of all the drama that he had last season with the team. Chris Godwin's coming off of an ACL tear. So there's a lot of interesting dynamics. The offensive line is having to gel with each other because there's patchwork of an offensive line at this point with all the injuries that they've had. And bringing in Shaq Mason from the New England Patriots this offseason as well. So a lot of moving parts on this offense. And Tom Brady also retiring this year, not practicing during the summer with the team, not participating fully in training camp. There was even that something a few weeks ago where he went to Robert Kraft's wedding, the owner of the New England Patriots, and didn't return within like 2 or 3 days, I think. He missed practice because of that. So it's interesting to see, and we're going to get to another sort of instance like this, but when you're the starting quarterback, it doesn't really matter how long you've been in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That off-season training with the team, developing the chemistry, it is so important to do. Because, again, Brady threw the ball 49 times, right? They moved the ball well. You have Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, Russell Gage. You've got plenty of receivers. And something's not connecting, and I think that it could be because he's struggling after not having practiced all offseason. And kind of bouncing off of that, I think another guy who's experiencing some of the same things is Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do agree with that. The Niners did look kind of awful. I don't know. I think it's very important. I agree with that 100%. These guys, no matter how long you've been, and that's Tom Brady we're talking about, Jimmy G in this case too, these guys can't be missing time in the off season and expecting it to just work in live action play. Like, that's not how it works. And I think another thing with Tom too, I just feel like him missing Gronk, he's missing a security blanket, some guy he knows he can trust and just lean on. He doesn't have that anymore. So it's really coming to show. They're still not out of it, but you know, And with Garoppolo, the thing with Garoppolo is I think that Garoppolo is now, I think Garoppolo has the pieces to be like a good game manager. He doesn't really turn the ball over too much anyways, and now he can just get it to McCaffrey on these dump-off swing passes, and then you have Debo on these little wildcat run, just give it to Debo, hand it off, shuffles. I think Garoppolo is going to figure it out. I think the Niners are actually a very, very scary team later in the season. But I agree.
Yeah, well, they haven't been scary so far. Yeah. They are only 3-4, and they took an absolute curb stomping this Sunday against the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs went into San Francisco and walked away with a 44-23 win. And yeah, I agree with you. They have plenty of pieces. Brent Ayuk at receiver, Debo Samuel at receiver. George Kittle is arguably the best all-round tight end. Christian McCaffrey is a phenomenal weapon. Kyle Shanahan is the master of pre-snap motion and getting all of these guys who can do all sorts of things. Debo, sort of a receiver who can play running back. Christian McCaffrey, a running back who can play receiver. You've got Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, who can do all kinds of things. Of course, Kittle is phenomenal at tight end and what he does. And Kyle Shanahan's a phenomenal coach when it comes to getting all the pre-snap motion and confusing defenses, and makes it easier on the quarterback. And you have a plethora of weapons there in San Francisco. But Jimmy Garoppolo, I do think, is struggling right now because he didn't practice with the team. And I have to say, I'm not a fan of San Francisco's approach to handling Jimmy Garoppolo this offseason. They ostracized him. They did not let him practice with the team. They told him, hey, we don't want you here. We're going to try and find a trade partner for you. Nobody wanted him. He had to practice by himself, away from the team. There's clips of this on the internet. You can find it. They were going to roll with Trey Lance. They bring him back on a restructured contract that essentially makes him like the highest paid backup or something like that. But he's getting backup money. He's not getting starter money. And what happens? Well, Trey Lance goes down in the first game. And they go to Jimmy G and like, hey, Jimmy, you know, pal, bud, guy that we kicked out of the building for like two straight months. Mm-hmm. Would you like to come back and, you know, be our starting quarterback for the rest of the season on a backup salary after we told you to leave and we didn't want you anymore and made you practice away from the team? Not a fan of how San Francisco handled Jimmy Garoppolo. And I commend Jimmy G for being the guy that he is and just hanging around.
That's very professional.
Yes. Yeah. Coming in when his number was called. He went 25 of 37 for 303 yards and two touchdowns, had one interception. Patrick Mahomes was incredible. 25 of 34 for 423 yards, three tutties, one interception. The Kansas City Chiefs look like the best team in the NFL right now to me. I know they lost to the Bills, and they had that weird loss to the Colts that they, you know, had no business losing to, but they look pretty dominant. And especially in this performance against a defense as good as San Francisco's, a Super Bowl caliber defense, scoring 44 points, they are dangerous. All right, well, we're going to cut to break. We have all kinds of football. We're going to continue with NFL when we return right here on the Student Section.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
And welcome back to the Student Section. We left off talking about a little NFL football. We're going to keep things rolling in the pro leagues. Dak Prescott made his return since his week one injury versus the Lions, and he looked pretty good. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Lions 24-6. Not really a competitive game. Dak was 19 of 25 for 207 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions. Trayvon Diggs, though, yeah, he had an interception. Him and Jordan Lewis both picked off Jared Goff, who, you know, early on in the season, the Lions, their offense looked pretty good. I think statistically speaking, after the third game, they were the top offense in the NFL. Things have sort of taken a nosedive for the Lions, and their defense was not great to begin with and has continued to not be great all throughout the rest of the season. So had some high expectations for the Lions in, you know, Lion standards, maybe winning, you know, seven games, six games. They're 1-5 right now and have not won a single game on the road, or excuse me, in their division. So, like we expected, Cooper Rush wins four games. He loses one during his little five-game stint that he played. Dak Prescott comes back healthy, and there is absolutely zero debate about who is the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dak Prescott all the way. And, you know, I kind of think that maybe he was asked to kind of hurry up and get back for this game after what we saw from Cooper Rush against Philly. Didn't look great. So Dak Prescott is back, and the Dallas Cowboys are winning yet again. Green Bay not winning. They fell to Washington 23-21, so a close game. But Green Bay has lost three straight games in a row, which is something that they have not done in a long time, and is mildly concerning, I would say, for a lot of Green Bay fans. Taylor Heinicke had to play as Carson Wentz is suffering a hand injury.
Mm-hmm.
He went 20 of 33 for two touchdowns and one interception. Brian Robinson Jr., former Bama running back, had 20 carries for 73 yards. Fortunately, could not get a touchdown today. I don't know exactly what's happening with Green Bay. I think maybe when we talked about Tom Brady, we talked about Jimmy Garoppolo not being in sync with these wide receivers because they haven't played with these guys during the offseason. Well, you look at the Green Bay wide receiver situation right now, you know, Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb, those are guys that Aaron Rodgers is familiar with. He's thrown to. They have two rookies, though, Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson, that they're trying to incorporate. And it just feels like, and, you know, Sammy Watson as well, who has just joined the team this offseason, it feels like Aaron Rodgers does not trust these new additions to the team. And I think that might be hurting them as well. It also looks like Aaron Rodgers is not fully comfortable in the pocket and is not trusting his guys up front either. So, like Jimmy G, like Tom Brady, I think what we're seeing is some lack of trust and some lack of comfortability with this team. Because you would expect Aaron Rodgers, arguably the most talented quarterback in history. Matt LaFleur is a good offensive mind. I don't know if I'd call him great. I think we're kind of seeing some of his flaws this season. Very rigid system, not a ton of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect them to be winning more than 3-4.
I feel like Aaron is trying to almost play perfect for these guys, like trying to elevate them to a level that they can't even be elevated to because of that lack of trust. A lot of times in the game, and the Commanders had zero sacks, a lot of times in the game, he would step back in the pocket and immediately look to move. Immediately, like, he wasn't really setting his feet. He just looked kind of uncomfortable out there. Everything looked weird. The offense just looked really weird. And we got to give the Commanders some credit. They played a very dominant. They had a dominant second half, both sides of the ball. So it wasn't, you know, just the lack of for the Green Bay Packers, but more of us, the Washington Commanders, putting that pressure on these guys. Scary Terry was honestly outrageous in the second half against Zaire Alexander. Antonio Gibson is so explosive when he's not fumbling the ball. He's probably our better running back option than B-Rob, but B-Rob is definitely the more sturdy, the more rigid, and like the guy you want to go to for consistency because you know he's not going to lose the ball. So those guys just played very well, and Heinicke just such an energy bunny. And once they lost the game, like once the energy started swinging to Washington, I felt like the home crowd really got involved, and you could kind of see it had an impact on the Green Bay offense.
Yeah. Tua Tagovailoa made his return against Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football. Miami walked away with the win 16-10. Tua came out in the first offensive drive and looked absolutely phenomenal. They obviously had scripted a great offensive game plan, as offensive minds, coordinators, offensive head coaches usually do. They'll script the first couple series, and they had a fantastic game plan. The defense for Miami played great. I thought the Pittsburgh Steelers defense had some phenomenal adjustments. You know, Tua is so good at hitting those intermediate passes to guys like Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki, Tyreek Hill, and letting them catch the ball in an like the middle part of the field and then run up the field and make some, you know, some decent chunk yardage after the catch.
Yeah.
And because you have Tyreek Hill and you have Jalen Waddle and you have Cedric Wilson and some of these other guys who have a lot of speed, a lot of teams have sort of played far back down the field and they're trying to take away the deep ball. And what I thought Pittsburgh did well was they recognized that Miami was throwing towards the intermediate parts of the field and these receivers had a lot of room, a lot of space. Minkah Fitzpatrick was playing pretty high and they were catching the ball and making things happen after the catch. So they brought Minkah Fitzpatrick down, who was a former Miami Dolphin, and that was the first time he had come back to Miami to play, so that was a great storyline. They brought those guys down to play the intermediate part of the field and took away those, you know, middle-of-the-field passes. And something that Miami didn't do was try and take a deep shot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's...
Which completely goes against the style of play that Tua... Like, he's made for that, to sling the ball to his guys, and he has the perfect guys for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I think that goes to show, and that also plays in the hand that, you know, Pittsburgh, they're just a disciplined team, man. They come in with a game plan. No matter how bad it looks, they gave the Steelers a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
It's just that Kenny Pickett threw three interceptions. And generally, if you throw three interceptions, you don't have a chance to win the game. So it wasn't on the defense.
And I'll talk about interceptions here. It felt like Pittsburgh, their DBs got hit in the chest by Tua's balls like four times, right? I mean, Tua threw potentially three picks, mm-hmm. and the Steelers just could not hold on to the ball. And ultimately, I think that may have also cost them the game. Had those guys catch those interceptions... Mm-hmm. Maybe looking at a different outcome.
I think that goes into just them realizing that their guy on the other end, Kenny Pickett, wasn't going to, you know, do, like, you know, not even do the right thing, but more so they weren't going to win the game. So the defense was starting to press. And usually when you're pressing, you're thinking way too much and it's not as instinctual. And I feel like they were just trying to get the interception rather than let it just kind of happen, you know.
Yeah. Anything. I agree 100%. Last thing here, New York Giants, they had a great defensive stop in their game over the Jaguars. They now are 6-1. Ryan Daboll is doing insane things. He's doing an insane job of coaching up that team. They were not great last year, and they really didn't change much in terms of personnel mm-hmm. either, right? You look mm-hmm. at the guys they brought in, obviously Evan Neal, we're all familiar with him. Kayvon Thibodeau. So they brought in some nice pieces, but that's not exactly guys that are just impacting the game yeah. so much. Brian Daboll is just doing a heck of a job.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be remiss. Yes, I think he is sitting atop my coach of the year candidates here. We'd be remiss to not talk about Matt Ryan. Suffered a grade 2 shoulder separation, and it looks like he may be out for the rest of the season. I'm not sure that's an injury that warrants him being out for the whole season. So there is some discussion about whether or not they're using this to kind of just say, hey, we need to move on. Matt Ryan's not the guy. We made a mistake. So in the meantime, Sam Ehlinger will start for the Colts. All right, real quick here. Alabama takes down Mississippi State 32-6. That singular touchdown came in garbage time late in the fourth quarter. You had tons of backups in. I think it was a backup who made an error on the secondary and allowed a guy to get open. So really great performance by the defense. You know, they get kind of embarrassed in Knoxville. You know, 52 points on Alabama is something that hasn't happened since 1907, which we talked about last week. So they come in, You know, Mike Leach has the air raid offense. I got to say, I felt bad for Will Rogers, right? He just broke the SEC career completion percentage record the week before. And what happens? Well, he just had a terrible time with it and really struggled. His completion percentage probably went down tremendously. He was 30 of 60, so he's 50% completion percentage. So not great at all.
Yeah.
Not great at all.
Throwing the ball way too much.
Yeah. Alabama could not run the ball.
At all.
And it looks, you know, not all too optimistic in terms of the offensive line play, right? We had 29 yards on the ground. A lot of that's because, you know, we had some detracted yards here. Jahmyr Gibbs had 10 carries for 37 yards. So, you know, without the detractions, you're looking at a little over 50 yards. But again, mm-hmm. That's only 50 yards. That's not a lot.
It wasn't as dominant of a performance as the score indicates. Like it was dominant, but if you were watching the game, I feel like you kind of pick up on what I'm saying.
I think what you're kind of getting at is the defense.
Yeah.
It would sort of looked for like an older kind of game where you have a low score. The defense is the side of the ball that wins the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama's offense didn't look crazy explosive. I think Will Reichard ended up kicking like three field goals, so he accounted for 9 points,
mm-hmm.
or excuse me, 12 points. Of course, you have those field goals that after the touchdown. Bryce Young threw two touchdowns in this game, and you had one touchdown on the ground. So, you know, you look at the Tennessee game. Alabama scores 49 points. Bryce Young is not 100% and kind of struggled a little bit early, but about midway through the first quarter, the offense clicks and we score and score and score 49 points. And the defense struggled. Well, you come to this game, the defense didn't allow a single point until garbage time.
Left, yeah.
Yeah, garbage time. And the offense struggled. So it's been like this for a little while now. The offense and the defense haven't been at their best in the same game,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think hopefully, you know, we have a bye week this week. We're going to go play LSU in Death Valley in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can use this time during the bye week to adjust some things. Bryce Young can get fully healthy. We can start incorporating some of these receivers who are beginning to come back, mm-hmm. guys like Tyler Harrell, guys like JoJo Earl.
Mm-hmm.
JoJo Earl got to play in this game as well, 3 catches for 38 yards and a touchdown.
This is a good time, this bye week, to really find out and edge out our identity as a football team. I feel like we all know, all the Tide fans know, what type of team we have, the potential we have. But it seems like, like you said, these guys haven't shown it on both sides of the ball. And I don't even remember a game they have done it, to be honest. And I might be forgetting something, but I feel like it's been kind of inconsistent all year. And not even in a bad way. We're winning these games, but eventually that's going to come back to bite us. We can't be playing elite teams who's going to be able to match our talent, match our abilities, and think we can only be good on one side of the ball and they can score such and such, or we can let up such and such points on them. That's not how that's going to work. So this is a big big week. LSU looks good. I don't think they should beat us still, but they are definitely on momentum. They beat a good Ole Miss team, so we have to see. And I also want to give a shout out to Eli Ricks. He changes that defensive, that secondary so much. His length, and he's so physical, man. Like, those are stuff, you know, those are things. I feel like he's the type of guy that he can just really get into opposing receiver's head, and they don't know how to, you know, really defend it.
Yes, we will continue this talk. We've got a lot to talk about in terms of college football as well when we return from the break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back to the student section. left off talking about Alabama football. You mentioned Eli Ricks. You know, after the Tennessee game, Monday's press conference that following Monday, Nick Saban said something interesting, and he talked about evaluating guys and, you know, potentially making some changes to who was starting. Eli Ricks is a guy that we took in the transfer portal this offseason from LSU. He was a true freshman All-American, incredible talent at that corner position, and he's come in, he's had some lingering issues, you know, off-season issues with the law, you know, got that dealt with, everything's good there. But it seemed like, hey, maybe this defensive system that Alabama runs, where we ask so much of the corners mentally, might need, you know, might need a few more weeks than we initially anticipated to get him ready. Well, he comes in this game against Mississippi State, and he gets beat one time. And I don't even think that counted. Like, it ended up coming back for something. But he looked fantastic, right? We talked about in Tennessee, Kool-Aid McKinstry was only targeted one time. They did not throw on Kool-Aid McKinstry. They targeted other guys. Mississippi State tried to do the same thing. They didn't initially throw on Kool-Aid McKinstry. They threw on Eli Ricks. And after several, you know, great pass breakups, Mississippi State tried to throw on Kool-Aid McKinstry. They're like, all right, we can't throw on Eli Ricks. Maybe we can throw on Kool-Aid McKinstry. That didn't work out as well either. So I think with the way Eli Ricks played against Mississippi State, you know, you expect him to probably continue to play for the rest of the season. I mean, this is a guy who preseason had some first-round draft pick kind of grades on him. I even saw some of these guys, like Mel Kiper, who had him in like top 20 draft picks. So, an incredible talent, had a lot of struggles, but it looks like he's, you know, found his groove because he played fantastic.
Both of them on the, like, two of those corners on each side is, like, that's ridiculous. That's scary, man. Like, if we can get, you know, make sure the chem is going and these guys are communicating right, especially since he's just kind of got thwarted in there in the live game action, like, that is scary. That he looked really good. Really good.
Yeah. Perhaps Alabama will have two lockdown corners at the end of the season. That'd be fantastic. Well, we're speaking of LSU. LSU takes down the previously undefeated Ole Miss 45-20. LSU just looked really good in this game, right? Ole Miss gets off to a fast start. They get up, I think it was 17 at some point. LSU fights back. They do not give up. They battle back. Jalen Daniels, 21 of 28 for 248 yards and two touchdowns. He had a really good day. You know, LSU had one interception. So, you know, Jackson Dart, not the cleanest game, of course. But, I mean, you look at this. Three sacks for LSU. Four sacks for Ole Miss. It kind of, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, how does LSU score 45 points and Lane Kiffin and this offense only score 20? You know, I looked at the score and I thought, you know, I read it backwards. I thought, oh, it's Ole Miss 45, LSU 20. That's probably the score. But no, LSU, I mean, they sort of found their groove against Florida, right? They started to click. The team started to play a lot better. And they look like they might be a hard out for Alabama.
It will be. It will be a hard out just because of the hype going into Baton Rouge. It's always a big game every year, especially when both teams are competent enough. Well, we usually are. But first-year coach Brian Kelly, I just don't know if he's there just yet. I thought coming in that he wasn't going to be a good fit as a head coach. Now it's looking like it's looking like he's really getting comfortable, and you know, he probably is going to end up being a good fit. I just don't think, and I'm going to be honest, I was, by the time this game was starting, I was already on the quad tailgating, getting ready for the Bama game. But as I look at the box score, I'm seeing that Daniels had 23 carries rushing the ball, and you know, he was also effective in the air. But I think our front seven is going to be too dominant. He can't run the ball that many times, and And I just don't see realistically him being able to run the ball that many times. Someone else is going to have to step up on the offense other than him.
It'll be really interesting to see, you know, I love to talk about fit because Nick Saban, he's a guy from West Virginia, right? He's coaching in Cleveland, the Cleveland Browns. He is a head coach at Michigan State. He comes down to Louisiana. Yeah, he's not a good fit. He shouldn't be in Louisiana. He wins a national championship. Mm-hmm. Les Miles, not a great fit, man. He shouldn't. He wins a national championship. Mm-hmm. Ed Orgeron's the perfect fit. You couldn't imagine a better fit for LSU football. He wins a national championship. And then he gets fired a few seasons later because lightning in a bottle.
Lightning in a bottle, yeah.
Could not sustain that kind of success. So I think if you are winning, you're a good fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they said that about Urban Meyer. He came to Florida. You know, a guy from up north. He doesn't know. You know, he's from, what, I think, Idaho or something like that. He doesn't know. SEC, we're going to eat him alive. Won two national championships in Florida. So when you're winning, you're a good fit. And mm-hmm. Brian Kelly has only lost two games this season.
Mm-hmm.
In the season opener, right? So it's the first game that you're coaching with these guys. It's going to be tough. And we're going to talk about a similar instance later. They lose 24-23. So 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
They lose by 1 point. They win. And they get to Tennessee. And they get blown out by Tennessee. We all saw what Tennessee was whenever we played them. Mm-hmm. They're a very, very good team. They're an excellent offensive team. Argument to be the best offensive team in the country. It depends on how you view Ohio State. And the defensively, they can create pressure. Alabama, you know, historically has had some issue with mobile quarterbacks. When you look to KJ Jefferson this season, I thought we did a decent job of handling him. Hendon Hooker this season, decent job. So I'm interested to see how we try and contain Jalen Daniels. Mm-hmm. But also you have to think LSU has a really good receiving core. So I'm very excited to watch Eli Ricks go up there against some of his former teammates and battle that out.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be a fantastic game coming off of the bye week for us. Clemson, they survived Syracuse. It's about all I can say. 27-21. Ultimately made a quarterback change, so Dabo Swinney benches DJ Uiagalelei in favor for true freshman Cade Klubnik, who only threw four passes and completed two of them. It did not look pretty for Clemson. Clemson's the fifth-ranked team in the country. Now, Syracuse was previously undefeated, 14th team in the country, right? They go for 167 yards on the air, 124 yards on the ground, so nothing overly impressive. But I'm watching this Clemson team. DJ Uiagalelei, his ceiling, like in the Wake Forest game, is incredible, right? He's had some really good games this season. His floor is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I think, you know, so he's sort of inconsistent in that way. I don't know if Clemson is a playoff caliber team. And I've watched them, and the ACC, in my opinion, you're watching what the Big 12 is right now. You're watching the Pac-12 right now. The ACC is the weakest conference.
Yes.
You know? And Clemson, they struggled against Syracuse. Like, Syracuse, really?
Syracuse is having a good year, but 100%. They should not.
Yeah, I mean, you're Clemson. Like, you should not. You know, you had to go into overtime against Wake Forest, right? You beat NC State by only 10 points. Florida State, you won 34-28, so that's, you know, a respectable win, I guess. But, I mean, when you look at the teams that they played, Georgia Tech, Furman, Law Tech, Boston College, I mean, these are not good teams. They're going to play Notre Dame.
They should win that game, but I wouldn't be surprised if Notre Dame gives them some trouble.
You know
In South Bend?
I think, you know, Louisville, we'll see. They have a really dynamic quarterback. Miami looks atrocious. South Carolina, we're going to talk about them in a little bit too, but hey, I think South Carolina might push Clemson. To me, Clemson will probably get into the playoffs just because they're likely to go undefeated and be an ACC mm-hmm. championship team. There are going to be a lot of one-loss teams that do not make it to the playoffs that would crush Clemson. Yeah. I think Tennessee would beat Clemson right now.
Yes.
In fact, I think if Clemson were in the SEC, let's say they were in the SEC East, I think they would probably finish at best third. You know, behind Tennessee and Georgia. I don't know. Kentucky may beat them with Will Levis. Mm-hmm. They were in the SEC West, you know. Ole Miss probably beat them. LSU may beat them. Yeah, Alabama definitely beat them, right? So third maximum, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've just not been impressed with Clemson this season.
And the thing is, they're so inconsistent that I think that they could lose. They could slip up. We never know.
Yeah. Well, they're only ranked fifth right now, so the AP, they don't view them as a playoff team. Of course, Alabama is sixth, so, you know. Oregon, we're talking about that head coach who struggled in the first game there. Oregon beat UCLA 45-30. Dan Lanning, first game, travels to Atlanta on a quote-unquote neutral site for his first matchup against the reigning national championships, Georgia, right? So not really a neutral site at all. And they get, they get embarrassed against Georgia. And all that they've done so far is win. And they have won pretty soundly in many of their games. And Oregon's a good team.
They are.
They're a good team, right? What's their closest win? Their closest win was against Washington State, who was a good team as well, 44-41. Their next closest was against UCLA by 15 points there. So Bo Nix played a great game, 22 of 28 for 283 yards and 5 touchdowns. He also carried the ball 8 times for 51 yards. So when you get great Bo, and it seems like Bo Nix in this offensive system, he's being developed a little bit better. He's being managed a little bit better.
He looked incredible out
there. He looks great,
yeah.
Right? So Oregon, I think, is probably going to end up winning the Pac-12. I don't think they do not play UCLA in the regular season. They do play Utah, though, on the 19th of November. That will be an interesting game. But
the Pac-12 is really good, man.
The Pac-12, they're definitely a lot better this season than they have been in terms of, you know, the whole conference. That's a great conference to watch. Another great conference to watch is the Big 12. Oklahoma State took down Texas 41-34. Neither one of these teams really went away. And Oklahoma State just pulled out the win. Unfortunate for Steve Sarkisian. This is, I think, his third loss on the season. Everybody said Texas was back. Texas is not back. They lost 3 games. Now, next season, when you have Xavier Worthy and you have Quinn Ewers in the second year, Xavier Worthy's in his third year, we'll see. But this season, no, Texas is not back. I'll tell you who is back, though. TCU. TCU beat Kansas State 38-28. They had to rally back from a pretty sizable deficit there. They currently sit atop of the Big 12, and they look really good. I think this is an interesting thing. TCU has knocked out 4 quarterbacks this season, and I don't mean knocked out as in like they got KO'd. I mean knocked out as in they got hurt and had to leave the game. So I don't know what TCU is doing. I don't know how they're coaching their players to strategically attack guys, but they are winning.
Something's got to be up.
Another Texas team that's struggling, Texas A&M, fell to South Carolina 30-24. Hey, Jimbo Fisher has 4 losses on the season, so 8-4, his lucky number there. We'll see if he actually manages to win 8 games this season. I'm not so sure he will. I mean, let's look and see what their schedule is for the remainder.
You got Ole Miss next.
You have Ole Miss.
He's got LSU still.
Ugh. Florida. Auburn's going to play him tough. Mm-hmm. UMass is the one team that you look at and say, okay, they're going to win that.
That should be an automatic one.
Yeah. Ole Miss, Florida. Yeah, I don't know. He'd be lucky. I'll say this. Jimbo Fisher would be lucky to win the rest of his games and finish 8-4. I mean, really, they're fighting for bowl eligibility right now. They're 3-4, so they're not...
That's insane.
You know, they're under 500 right now. This is a team that's insanely talented, and Jimbo Fisher is poorly managing this team. We saw Connor Weigman, so, you know, that's the third quarterback who has played any kind of snaps for Texas A&M this season. No one can sell me that Jimbo Fisher is an offensive guru, and no one can sell me, especially, that Jimbo Fisher is a quarterback guru. I think you take Jameis Winston out of his repertoire, you take Jameis Winston out of his record, and you look at the quarterbacks that he's coached, not one of them have been overly successful. The closest is Kellen Mond, and he's not fantastic either. So, not a great time for Jimbo Fisher. Obviously, he has a massive contract buyout, so I don't think he'll be fired, but some of these guys who are paying him tons of money every single season may step in and say, all right, you got to go hire a new offensive coordinator and you got to let him start calling the plays. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the student section. Be sure to tune in next week as we have another fantastic weekend of college and professional football coming up. Bama on a bye week this week. So not going to have to worry about watching a game and maybe being stressed out like I have been in some of these games this season.
A little break. We need
this. We get a little bit of a break. The players need it, and the fans probably could use it as well. All right, thanks so much for tuning in. We'll catch you next week.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.